Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. Thanks for joining us. To check out our latest commentary, go to our blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's T-A-I. L-O-R-M-A-D-E talkradio.blogspot.com. Hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jimmy and I are excited to be with you once again. Today's topic includes the Michael Jackson trial. Dr. Conrad Murray versus the state of California. Do you think he's guilty? Herman Cain's comments. Black voters have been brainwashed, according to Herman Cain. We will also be talking about President Obama's Black Caucus speech. He said, take off your bedroom slippers. Put on your marching shoes. Shake it off. Stop complaining. Stop grumbling. Stop crying. We're going to press on. We've got work to do, CBC. What do you think about his comments? And of course, we will be discussing much, much more. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family members and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter. That's at TaylorMade101, and I will be reading your tweets live on the air. So if you have any comments or questions, just send me a tweet. Again, that's at TaylorMade101. But first, let's take a look at our current events. In the Huffington Post, there was an article entitled Conrad Murray's Attorney Says Michael Jackson administered deadly drug dose himself. The article says, first, prosecutors showed a photo of Michael Jackson's pale and lifeless body lying on a gurney. Then they played a recording of his voice just weeks before his death. Slow and slurred, his words echoed Tuesday through a Los Angeles courtroom at the start of the trial of the doctor accusing of killing him. As a worldwide audience watched on TV and Jackson's family looked on from inside the courtroom, a drugged Jackson said the following, "We have to be phenomenal. When people leave this show, when people leave my show, I want them to say, I've never seen nothing like this in my life. Go, go. I've never seen nothing like this. Go. It's amazing. He's the greatest entertainer in the world." And I will be playing a clip of Michael Jackson's in his slurred state. But the prosecutors played the audio for the first time during opening statements as they portrayed Dr. Conrad Murray, 58, as an incompetent physician who use a dangerous anesthetic without adequate safeguards and whose neglect left the superstar abandoned as he lay dying. Defense attorneys countered that Jackson caused his own death by taking a drug dose, including propofol, after Mary left the room. Nothing the cardiologist could have done would have saved the King of Pop, defense attorney Ed Chernoff told jurors, because Jackson was desperate to regain his fame and needed rest to prepare for a series of crucial combat concerts. Audience out there, my listening audience, what do you think happened? What is the trial really about? Manslaughter, drugs, or power? Is dying on prescription medication as bad as alcoholism? Dying by cocaine, crack addiction? I would love to get your comments on this. Also in the news, again, Herman Cain. Last week, we talked about Herman Cain's Florida straw poll victory. This week, he is in the news again. It turns out that he thinks black folks are brainwashed. Well, of course, Jesse Jackson was not going to sit by and let Florida straw poll winner and potential Republican frontrunner Herman Cain get away with those comments. Now, according to Politico, here's what Jesse Jackson had to say in response to Herman Cain's comments. Black voters have not been brainwashed, and suggesting as much as Herman Cain and Pat Buchanan have recently, it is demeaning and derogatory. The article goes on to say that those are very strong words. It's both demeaning and insulting. Cain, the former CEO of Godfather's Pizza and a Republican presidential candidate, on Wednesday told CNN that black voters have been brainwashed into not being open-minded, not even considering a conservative point of view. He said, "I have received some of that same vitriol simply because I am running for the Republican nomination as a conservative," Cain told CNN's Wolf Blitzer. So, it's just brainwashing and people not being open-minded, pure and simple. Now, on Thursday, Buchanan and MSNBC contributor endorsed that view. Here's what Pat Buchanan had to say. "I admire Herman Cain for standing up and going against, if you will, the conventional wisdom and being a tough African-American businessman who succeeded in a tough world." He said blacks have been hurt by programs championed by Democratic presidents like Lyndon B. Johnson. "Great society liberalism has been devastating for the African American family. I think what he's saying that they bought an awful lot of liberal propaganda on the liberal plantation, and I think he's right," Buchanan said. Well, well, well. What do you think about that, listening audience? And then I also want to talk about the president's speech to the CBC. Now, it's been several days since the president delivered these remarks at the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation annual Phoenix Awards dinner. However, there is much ado about nothing when it comes to the comment he made before the mostly African-American audience. In particular, after leaning hard on Congress to pass the American Jobs Act and criticizing Republicans who are dead set on making him a one-term president, President Obama concluded his speech by saying, "I expect all of you to march with me and press on. Take off your bedroom slippers, put on your marching shoes, shake it off, stop complaining, stop grumbling, stop crying. We are going to press on." We've got work to do, CBC. Now, of course, a few days later, Representative Maxine Waters, the Democratic from California, expressed concern about the president's tone and tenor of his remarks. She said, "I don't know who he was talking to, because we're certainly not complaining." Well, again, I would love to get your comments on any or all of these stories happening this week. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines and hear from you. We're going to take your calls. And, of course, we're going to solicit the feedback of Ask Jima. That's right. Jima Hill Cook is with us once again. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, "Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday." That's my friend. And of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Joining me today to talk about this week's current events, of course, is the executive producer of Current Events and the famous syndicated columnist of the Ask Jima blog at askjima.blogspot.com. That's askjema.blogspot.com. Of course, she is also the author of the TaylorMade Talk Radio blog. I would like to welcome Jima to the show. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right. First up today is Michael Jackson. Now, it is pretty perplexing, the trial is, that is, about what's happening right now with the trial. What are your thoughts about the trial so far?
Well, I think, of course, in the beginning, they tried to make his Michael be at fault in terms of retrying him with his lifestyle, when in fact this is about the negligence of the doctor, Dr. Conrad Murray, because of some of the things that have alleged that he did or did not do as it relates to Michael Jackson. So I think initially the media was trying to, and those in the courtroom was trying to once again put Michael Jackson on trial, as opposed to leaving it with Dr. Murray, as they needed to have done. And I'm glad they've, you know, gotten back to being on task. But it has been a disturbing amount of testimony that's just come out in these first 4 days. It's unbelievable.
You know, Al Sharpton, of course, and I must have to say that, full disclosure, you and Al communicate pretty regularly, just like you heard during the commercial break there. But Al Sharpton said the other day that just some of the same things that you're echoing right now. He says that Dr. Conrad Mary is on trial this week, not Michael Jackson. And in fact, he said in an article, Dr. Conrad Mary is on trial this week, accused of violating standards of medical care by leaving Michael Jackson unattended and failing to call 911. His defense will do whatever they can to keep him from serving jail time. They'll argue his innocence, his years of service, and most importantly, they will attempt to put Michael on trial again. This is what Reverend Al had to say. And so, you know, I agree with you. They're gonna really try his life as opposed to Conrad Mary.
Yeah, for sure. And therein lies, you know, one of the problems with our judicial system and how our court system works and how, you know, what things the attorneys will be able or try to put in as evidence or whatnot. I just hope that the people that are in charge of rendering sentencing just look at the facts of the case. And the facts of the case is simple. Just as Reverend Al stated, it's about Dr. Murray's negligence as a professional, you know, to do no harm. And whether or not it would have been him or another doctor, that would have been up to Michael to decide. But for him to fall prey and allow it seemed to be greed to weigh more to him than taking care of another human being, you know, that's sad. He shouldn't be practicing if money is more important to him than human life. Because I thought that's what doctors were here for, was to protect life, not to destroy it.
You know, that's a great point. And that's why I want to kind of bring up this next question. What is the trial really about? Is it about manslaughter? Is it about drugs, power, money, about any of these things? And the reason why I pose this question is because of the tape that they played in the opening of the trial. I'm going to play the tape for the listening audience out there, just in case you didn't get an opportunity to hear hear Michael Jackson himself saying it, because, of course, I read the transcript of what he said, and, in fact, he says, we have to be phenomenal. When people leave this show, when people leave my show, I want them to say, I've never seen nothing like this in my life. Go, go. I've never seen nothing like this. Go. It's amazing. He's the greatest entertainer in the world. But I want the listening audience out there to hear Michael's rendition of this particular language and how slurred and what they try to show Michael being drugged up. Listen to this. Okay, here we go.
When people leave that show, when people leave my show, I want them to say, I've never seen nothing like this in my life. Go, go. I've never seen nothing like this. Go. It's amazing. He's the greatest entertainer in the world. I'm taking that money. I'm really serving children. The biggest in the world. My reaction to the hospital.
Okay, so that was what they played in trial. So, Jim, what do you make of it? Why would they do something like that?
Well, I think it was to show, you know, how severe Michael was in terms of his illness, and that was a call that he made to his doctor, and if at that point his doctor did not intervene, I find that to be negligent, to hear him like that.
No, I have to agree with you, because obviously, when you're looking at in the grand scheme of things. Of course, I am getting a little seasoned, I use that word as opposed to old now, and I too understand the nicks and the pain and the aches that one gets as they age. And so I could imagine how this must be magnified for Michael Jackson, being that he's on the stage and he's training, he's dancing, and he's up at early, he's staying up late, and all the things he goes in. So I can understand how much pain he has. At least I can appreciate how much pain he's been going through. But what I don't understand is that if you're under that type of pain and you had to be medicated in that fashion, that there should have been some kind of intervention. You know, so that's why I asked the question. Was it about power or money more than anything? Is because the average person, Jimmy, you have to weigh in on this, but the average person, do you think that they would have been allowed to continue a drug regimen in the same fashion that Michael did?
Of course not. Of course not. Because I would hope that, you know, the average person, A, wouldn't be able to afford it. That's, you know, so it does come down to money and what money allows you to do. Sometimes money allows you to be able to circumvent the logic and reality, and it allows you to have people around you that will meet you where you are as opposed to trying to take you where you need to go. And so that's what money does. So money allowed Michael to have a Dr. Conrad Murray on his staff, where he was his only patient, I believe, which paying $150,000 a month. Do the math times 12 if it had lasted, you know, whatever. And so the fact that that was who he had around him, and Michael's problem has always been one of wanting to fit in, of wanting to be around people, of wanting people to accept him. So even if in his spirit he knew that his body was not going to make it those 50 tour dates, there was no way he was going to tell the promoters that it couldn't happen. There was no way he was going to tell anybody that was too much. No way, because that's just who Michael was as a performer, as a person. You know, there's no way he was going to bow out and say, I just can't do that many. And so he put himself out there to continue, knowing that it was costing him, in the end, his life.
What's interesting is that, and I don't know how many of the pundits or the commentators have even thought about this, but, you know, all of the activities that led up to this, of course, him being in those trials, talking about with the kids, and then all of the talk about how much debt Michael Jackson was in over the past couple of years, which probably could have put him in a position to actually want to make this money so that he could pay off his debt. Do you think that had anything to do with it? The fact that he may have been truly in debt, that way he had to, you know, to put these 50 shows together so he can try to make some more money?
No. There's people like Michael Jackson, with all that he had, he couldn't have spent all that money. He had too many assets. He might not have had liquid money, I guess that's what you call it. He might not have had access to it where he can go to the bank and cash a check. But I guarantee you, Michael Jackson was not broke. He was far from broke. And so he may have had to, as they say, liquefy some assets to get some money. But no, I don't think it was about the money for Michael. I really honestly think it was about giving the fans one last look at him before he decided to put up his dancing shoes and really devote his time to being a father. That's what I really think it was about. Michael was the ultimate performer. There would be no other Michael Jackson. I don't care who's out there trying. There would not be another Michael Jackson in terms of performance, in terms of service, in terms of love for what he did. A lot of people will do it for the money. Michael didn't have to do it for the money. He had more money than he would ever spend. And so it was for the love of performing. It was for the love of entertaining. But it was also for the love of wanting to be loved, to be accepted, to be appreciated. So it's all of those things. So, no, I don't think it had as much to do with him needing the money. Now, the people around him may have tried to convince him that he needed the money to be able to help all those causes that he wanted to help, but it wasn't about the money. In my heart, I don't believe it was about the money.
You know, well, let me take another angle. then? You know, people always mention drugs as the culprit that take a lot of these entertainers down, and as well as athletes, and as well as a lot of regular people too. And in a lot of cases, they're not just talking about illegal drugs like cocaine, crack, or those type of narcotics, but they also talk about prescription drugs. But I want to add another drug to this list. And fame. Fame is also a drug. People can really get caught up in the nostalgia that being famous, that being being worshipped, as you will, that what it gives you. Do you think he was kind of also on that drug as well?
Well, you have to remember that Michael never really wanted to be a performer. And so it was only after he was forced into it with his parent by Joe Jackson that he, you know, saw something in it where he felt a lot freer. And then the second part about that is that, of course, I mean, you can't walk down the street without people passing out. I mean, literally, people, I mean, they had to have all sorts of medical people, not only just on his staff, but in any arena that he played in, because people would get so overwhelmed that they would fall out. I mean, can you imagine that you have that kind of effect on people, that just by the mere mention of your name or the mere mention of the fact that you're going to have a concert and people are losing their minds? Of course fame is an addiction, and it can be addictive, of course, because you feed it and you feed it, and then you go from, oh, that was just one person, to whole towns of people, to people, you know, from all over the world. And that was what Michael was. He was all over the world as we know it. He was all over the world. Michael could not go anywhere. There's some stars that we have in the world of entertainment and in Hollywood, but they fell in comparison to Michael Jackson's star. He could not go anywhere without being recognized, anywhere. So imagine that. Of course that's a drug. Of course it had something to do with his you know, his addiction cycle, because he had to do something to keep that thing going, for sure.
Right, yeah. I actually understand what Michael was going through with all the fame and all the glory, so I really understand that can part of him. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to continue the conversation about Michael Jackson and his and the actual case that people are really calling the Michael Jackson trial. And so when we return, we're going to continue the conversation. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Today we're discussing the Michael Jackson trial, as most people are calling it, but really, it's really Conrad Murray versus the state of California. And so we want to continue the conversation here. And so if you want to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And, of course, I have a Twitter feed coming out there live to you, and that's at TaylorMade101. That's TaylorMade101. And I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. So, we're talking about the Michael Jackson trial of Dr. Conrad Murray versus the state of California, and we're trying to see kind of the different nuances that are going on within the trial. And I want to talk a little bit more about this fact about so many superstars are dying of drugs abuse or drug use. And so I want to pose a question to Jima. That is dying on prescription drugs or prescription medication as bad as alcoholism or some type of cocaine or crack addiction? Jima, what do you think?
Yes, because anytime you have to take something to alter your state of mind, it's bad. So it's and I'm going to go biblical on you. It's almost like we tend to categorize sin and have big sins and little sins, but they're sin. And so we want to put more weight on one type of sin. Oh, you know, she sleeps around and he sleeps around and they do all this drinking and they're fornicating and having this and that. And yet you lying and cheating and stealing. It's still sin. And so whether or not it's cocaine, crack, marijuana, alcohol, or that, you know, every flavor of the medicine it is on the market these days for pain medication, anxiety, what is it? It's all wrong if you're doing it in excess.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a problem and you go to the doctor and the doctor says to you, this will help you, and you use it the way it's supposed to be used to help you, then that's okay. But when you use it after you're feeling better and you can't function without it, that's when it's a problem. And so I don't separate whether or not it's prescription or, you know, street drugs. Anything that alters your state of consciousness, anything that you cannot do without, you have to have it. It has the potential to be a problem.
Yeah, you know, I understand where you're going with this, and I can see your point. I just don't understand how it is that a doctor could allow, you know, this to occur for an extended period of time. So in the case of Michael Jackson, it was very obvious that he was in pain a lot and that the pain was so unbearable that he had to alter his state of mind or get into a state where he was taking these horse tranquilizers. At least that's what the rumor on the street is, that he was taking this medication that was so strong in order just to get to sleep at night because he was unable to sleep. And so if you're under a physician's care, like he was paying $150,000 a month, and that physician allow you to do that, isn't that considered negligence on the physician part?
Okay, it's two things you have to remember. One, you're making the assumption that Michael had the same primary care physician for his whole life, you know,
mm-hmm.
that he just, this was the same doctor from the same, when he originally got injured. And that's probably not the case, because what probably happened is that there probably was a doctor somewhere along the line that told Michael, I'm not writing you another prescription.
Okay.
And Michael had to go find another doctor, not telling them how long he's been on this stuff already. And so people will doctor shop. Now, there are some doctors who need some extra money, and they really don't care if you're addicted or not. They just want to get paid. There are some places here in the state of Texas where you can go with a prescription that might be old, and they'll refill it for you. So you, if you want it, you can go find it. It's just
wow.
Like if you're a crackhead and you want some crack, and you new to the city, you're going to go find where crackheads are.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same situation.
So in a case like this, then, so how is it then that people are pointing the finger at Dr. Conrad Mary? If that's the case, if it's left up to the patient, if the patient is demanding that they require this service, and if they're not going to get it from you, they're going to get it from somebody else. So why point the finger at Conrad Mary?
If at any point that anything Michael was doing was illegal.
Mm-hmm.
By forging a doctor's signature, or doctor shopping, and not being truthful on whatever. If anything he was doing was illegal, and Conrad Murray knew about it, then he has some culpability in it. If anything Conrad Murray did, and it's plausible, which is why he's been arrested, that he has some culpability in this. There's that particular medication is not supposed to be used unsupervised, period, by a medical professional. So at no time should Michael have been able to inject himself, because he should not have had it at his disposal to be able to inject himself, because it's supposed to be under the supervision of a medical professional. So therein is where, the issue comes up around Dr. Murray's culpability. Is that he gave him some, not that he gave it to him, but that he gave him some and allowed him to have something that should only have been used under the care of a medical professional.
Yeah, but I mean, you can lead the horse to the water, but you can't make him drink. I mean, even if the drugs were in his house, and Dr. Mary may have gave him the right instructions, that doesn't mean that he had to inject himself.
But you just laid the premise of the fact of all the other issues he had going on, whether it's addiction to pain medication, or whether it's addiction to street drugs, whether it's addiction to sex, all of that is around some unmet need that is driving that behavior. So regardless of what we saw when he performed, we saw perfection. But it was obvious in his personal life it was far from perfect. Now, what tends to happen is we see things in people, and yet because we're so close to them, we refuse to tell them to go get some help, or we kind of excuse it away, or we say, oh, it's just a phase, and so yet this phase lasts for 10 years. That's no longer a phase. That's a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of us dealing with what we see, we turn a blind eye to it because it's easier that way. Because we say, he grown or she grown, she ought to know what she's doing is wrong. Well, it's not about right or wrong at that juncture. It's about whether or not it's causing them harm. And how can I sit by and see you do something that I know is going to cause you harm, and I say I love you, I say I'm your physician, and I'm here to care for you, and I do nothing to help you. There's a lot of people that could have some ownership, things turned out. But at this juncture, Michael has some ownership because he never got to a point that he could fully admit that he had a problem and he needed help. But then Dr. Murray has some culpability because he knew he had a problem, and he, as it appears, didn't do enough to try to help Michael.
Now, you mentioned the fact that whenever you see cases like that, there is a notion to think that there is an unmet need. Michael Jackson was rich. He had everything at his disposal. He had all kind of people on his payroll. He could walk walk on the moon, basically. What unmet need could a person like Michael Jackson have that would allow him to make him think that he needed drugs so bad?
Our needs aren't connected to things as much as they're connected to our emotions. And although Michael could have bought everything, the one thing he couldn't buy was peace of mind. The one thing he couldn't buy was joy. He may have been happy, but the one thing he couldn't buy was joy. And it's those sorts of unmet needs that he had that he kept trying to fill Or he kept trying to ignore that I don't have joy. He kept trying to ignore that he didn't have peace of mind. And as he was making this transition, and that's what I really think this whole thing was about, this whole this is it, he was making the transition to be okay with not being in the spotlight, to being okay with just being a dad and being with his children. I think he was making this is it was part of the transition for him. It's unfortunate that it ended like it did, but our needs are not just about things. Our needs are about our emotional stability. And most people that have some sort of addiction have to do with some need, some unmet need that hasn't been met. And it has to do with something emotional. Either they got some issues around trust, they got some issues around abandonment, they got some self-esteem issues, they have a need to be loved by anybody at any cost. There's a thousand reasons why people turn to drugs or things to alter their state of consciousness. And so, it's just not about money, because there's been too many rich people, too many famous people who have died at the hand of drugs for it to be, all about money.
This is true.
We know that.
This is true. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So, Jima, what's the lesson here? We talked about this already this year with another young lady dying of drugs. What is the lesson here?
Well, I think the lesson in pure layman's terms is if you see somebody in trouble, try to extend them a hand of help, not by demeaning or making them feel worse than what they already feel, but just by simply saying, seems like you take that pill a lot lately. Something else going on with you? And it's interesting because I just finished reading Terry McMillan's book, Getting to Happy. And one of the characters in the book started taking prescription anxiety medicine and medicine for depression after she found out an issue with her husband and subsequently divorced and whatever. And so here it is, 6, 7, 8 years later, she's still taking these pills. And everybody in the circle knows she's still taking the pills, but nobody ever said anything because they thought the other person was going to say something. So then finally, she begins to realize, why am I still taking this stuff, 8 years after he's gone? Why am I still here? And so at some point, somebody in the circle says to her, whenever you're ready to talk about it, you can, but you really shouldn't still be on those. And so, and how is it you've been able to stretch out at prescription that long? See, we have to start asking questions, not just making statements, but asking questions about our people's behavior that we see. And if we begin to see changes in people that don't seem normal, and we got a lot going on in the world today, so of course people's behaviors are changing because there's so much happening. People losing jobs and they losing their health care and they losing their children and it's just houses. It's just a lot. And so you could understand somebody needing to go take something to kind of calm themselves down. But once the weather and the storm has passed, then and there's no more a need for that, then that's when you step into that friend and say, it's been a while now. You sure you still need to be taking that?
People are not all that receptive when you come to them with issues, especially if they're caught up in this and they're like, hey, I don't have a problem. Well, how do you deal with that?
Well, it's interesting you say that. I remember when I was living in Colorado and there was a young lady that I knew had problems with drinking. And so whenever we was at a function, whether it was my house or anybody else's house, if I was there, I wouldn't drink with her. And I'd tell her I wasn't going to drink with her. And if she came to my house, I'd say to her, you can't drink at my house. Now, you can do that you want to do before you get here, but you don't need to be drinking because this is what happens when you do. So I'm not going to participate with you in this. And when she was there and she was drinking, I'd come by and say hi, and I'd tell everybody, I'm not going to be a part of this because y'all know she has a problem, and you are feeding it by allowing her to do it in your presence. I'll see y'all later. Now, that took courage to do that, but I had to do it because I had to be the voice to everybody else saying, you all are part of her problem because y'all keep letting her do it. And eventually, you know, over time, she decided, well, I don't want to rain on nobody's parade, so I just stay at home. And I don't want Gima, you know, preaching at me. Well, whatever it is, however I'm going to impact your decision for that day, I need to impact your decision for that day. And eventually other people started saying, well, you know, you can come hang out, but you ain't drinking none tonight. Because last time we all, you know, somebody ended up in the hospital or we had to go. So we're not doing that this time. So she began to see that she did have a problem and that it wasn't all fun and games like she thought it was because everybody around her was doing it. She thought it was okay. So you just have to learn how to have some courage and take a stand. And you may lose some people in that process, but that's okay.
You know, that's interesting because we all heard the cliche, misery loves company. But and the pastor talked about this today. He says it's easier to get a drink or a hit of drugs than it is to get help in a lot of cases. So I'm glad you brought that up because it is true. You really have to have courage. And I'm sure the people that were around Michael Jackson because they were wanted to be in his circle didn't have the courage to tell him the truth. You know, they didn't want to be out in I'm pretty sure they talked about it behind his back. I mean, they all knew it. You could see it. But they didn't have the courage to come out and tell him the truth.
And sometimes it's not just courage. Sometimes it's also about being consistent and persistent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I only said it to her one time and then I never said it again, and I go back to participating in the madness, then I should have never said nothing. But so it takes me not only having courage, but I have to be persistent. That courage. I have to draw a line in the sand and say, no, you're not doing this in front of me, or I know what you're doing, and I'm going to hit you in the core of who you are. You know, my sister, who passed away this year, problem with drugs, and I would always say to her, I want you to do better. I know you can. I need to know how I can help you because I don't understand what that thing is that got such a hold on you. What is it? And unfortunately, I never got my answer because she could never really put her finger on it or she never really wanted to talk about it. But I let her know in no uncertain terms, I'm not participating in your madness. You want to go back to jail, you go back to jail. I don't visit people that's incarcerated. We don't have nothing to talk about. And people thought I was being cruel and I was being harsh. I was not, because you made a conscious decision to do whatever you did to land where you are. And you didn't have to. Different under different circumstances. But that message to her, she didn't have to, because it was too much help out there, too many people willing to just, you know, pack her up and take her anywhere she wanted to go to get some help. But I was persistent. And I stayed on her, and I kept saying, you can do it. And she would do okay for a while, and we'd have great conversation. So it's not just courage, but you have to have some persistence. And like I said, you might lose some people. My family thought I was being rude and mean and cruel, but I said, I know there's something else in there. And so when I see that, I press, because I know there's something else in there. You know, most people just don't get up going to go kill 20 people for just no apparent reason.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that clicked that said go kill 20 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just like it's something that clicks to make you go out and do that, there's something there that is pressing that's making you want to alter your state of consciousness where you do not want to deal with what's in front of you right now. So that, you know, it's not just about being courageous, but you have to be persistent as well.
So who was in Michael Jackson's corner that could have been his Gima?
Well,
you got a lot.
And it was,
he had a lot of people in his corner. I mean, he had.
And that's not to say that they weren't right. It's just that he wasn't ready. It's not to say that they didn't try to push. But, you know, when you don't want to be, when you don't want to hear something, you block people out your world. And we, you know, we've heard of instances where Michael wouldn't talk to nobody in his family for months.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know where he was sometimes because he had cut himself completely off. And the only person he would talk to was his mother. And, you know, and the and a mother's love for her child is unbreakable. And that bond that, that Miss Catherine has with Michael is whoa. So she wasn't going to do or say anything to push him away because she needed to have that contact. She needed to know he was okay. But I'm pretty sure there were times, you know, the siblings may have tried to intervene. But, you know, but then the fear of being cut off, too. Because if I'm not, if I ain't had an album in 20 years and you taking care of me and my family, I can't really say too much to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you might cut me off, and then I'm, my family and I are out there homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has something to do with it, I'm sure. And even just the people not in the family but on the peripheral. It's not to say that they didn't. It's just that Michael would shut himself off.
Wow. So we only have a few more minutes of this segment. I want to ask you to predict the outcome of this trial. What do you think is going to happen? What? So the question is twofold. What will we learn at the end of this trial, and what will be the outcome of this trial?
Well, I think we're going to learn that Michael's addiction was deeper than what we all thought. And I think this first week of testimony has shown some of that. I mean, I was in shock by, you know, some of the things and how frail he looked that, that day. I think we're going to find out the resiliency of his children. And although they were there and they seen him, that there's something in them that's greater than this tragedy, and that they're going to be awesome young men and women in the world of entertainment as well. I think at the end of the day, I think the doctor gets convicted simply because if they stick to just negligence, of him being negligent and having Michael have access to such a high, powerful drug without having medical attention and a professional under supervision of a medical professional, he will be found guilty of that. That those are my three predictions there.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about Herman Cain. We're going to get on the Herman Cain train just a little bit. We're going to talk about his comment that he made about black people being brainwashed. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, Current Events, and AskSEMA can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my
tragedy of life does not lie in not reaching your goals. The tragedy lies in having no goals to reach for. If not a calamity. To die with dreams unfulfilled. But it is a calamity to have no dreams. Ladies and gentlemen, the American dream is under attack. But the good news is we are fighting back.
Of course, that is your Republican front runner and the Florida straw poll winner, Herman Cain. Herman Cain has been making news week in and week out. Now, last week, we talked about him winning the Florida straw poll, and this week he's in the news again. It turns out he thinks black folks are brainwashed. Jima, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, it's interesting that, and this is not my original thought, but it's interesting listening to Carnell, Buckner, a Democratic strategist, was having a conversation on Anderson Cooper the other night. And it's interesting that black people have to be brainwashed to vote a certain way or, you know, to like a certain person. We only like, we only voted for President Obama because he was black. Or we only vote Democratic because we're brainwashed. But that language is never attached to any other group of people. I find that it's so hypocritical of our system, all you know, of our democracy, that we have to constantly defend why we vote like we vote when nobody else has to do that. Jewish people don't have to do it. Hispanics don't have to do it. Gay people don't have to do it. White people sure don't have to do it. They don't have to defend nothing. They just do whatever they want to do, and that's because that's what it is. So is it to say that white people have been brainwashed, that that's why they voted like they voted all of these years? Because they feel such a sense of superiority over everybody else? I mean, it's that type of language that infuriates me, because I'm more than a race of people. You just don't lump me in with everybody. And that's exactly what he found himself in. And it's unfortunate that it came from him. Because if he know history, you know, the tide of the black vote, quote unquote, didn't change until the standard of the Republican Party wanted to keep us in a certain category. So when they were against voting rights and the whole civil rights era and made this line in the sand that we want to keep them not involved in the process, it was an easy decision to switch parties. It wasn't about being brainwashed. The Republicans didn't want to. If it was up to the Republicans, Herman Cain wouldn't be one. He wouldn't be one. They wouldn't want him in the party.
So how does that Herman Cain get away with this type of language?
Because it's America. Freedom of speech.
So what do you make of Pat Buchanan's comments?
As I stated once again, why is it that our most trying, struggling time as a race of people continues to be some sort of sideline joke in the media? We go from the pledge of stating that life was better for blacks under slavery to now having some sort of connection to the plantation, like we just don't want to be free. And yet, I don't hear any reference to any part of any of the Jews being in concentration camps as being a good time, as them wanting to go back to that time. But you can't find a time in the last. You do a study, look at some data over the last 6 months. How many times you've seen the word or heard some politician that's running for president, no doubt, talk about slavery? Talk about plantations, talk about that, you know, there's just so many references to it. It's unbelievable. So Pat Buchanan did what he always does. He crossed the line. Bottom line, he crossed the line.
Well, I just don't understand how Herman Cain could even fix his mouth to say that blacks are brainwashed and be able to get away. And I was just kind of, I don't know if I was wondering, was Jesse Jackson going to get more involved in the conversation or more than he did? Because he said black voters have not been brainwashed and suggested as much as Herman Cain and Pat Buchanan have recently is demeaning and derogatory. We continue to allow, or the media continue to allow people to do this. And what makes it, I guess, worse for me is to have another African-American go out and make a blanket statement like that, as if we are all a monolithic people and that whatever one does, we all do. And that has not been the case.
No, it has not been the case. And as I stated, we are the only group of people that have to consistently deal with stuff like this. Nobody else has to deal with this. No, you tell me another group of people that has to deal with this as consistently as we do. Just give me one example. There isn't.
Right.
And so that's what makes it so disheartening, that he would use the for lack of a better word, he would use the race card in this manner. You know, to race bait and to race bite, basically. Because, you know, to say that, you know, black, and there are a lot of black conservatives. They just might not be liking this bunch of people that's out there right now. I see every news show, there's at least one or two African Americans on there talking from that perspective, being a conservative. I have no problem with the Republican Party. There should be a diverse group of people in all sections of our government. But when you are intent on locking out a certain group of people, and Herman Cain should be careful because he wants to talk about blacks being brainwashed, and it's this very same party that is on the verge of locking out 20 million people from voting. So Herman Cain may not even be around because won't nobody be able to vote for him but people that don't look like him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're only going to take that so far. So when you have 35 states or 39 states with some sort of legislation on their books about changing our voting, the voting process and the days of being able to vote and all of those things, all of those are from Republican states. Not one Democratic governor is doing that. That's all from Republicans. Now, you tell me that's not connected to the last election and what happened.
So
Herman Cain needs to be careful because he's, you know, in a minute he's going to need somebody to come vote for him.
So to me, it's obvious that he is trying to stay in the news, stay relevant. And it's unfortunate he's having one of those get your hand in my pocket moments where he's stirring up all this chaos so people can be, you know, doing more talking about him while these other things are happening. And at the end of the day, do you believe that he will get the nomination?
No. Herman Cain will not get the nomination because, I'm just going to go out on a limb. I'm not really sure who gets the nomination, but it won't have anything to do with whether or not the president gets reelected. But that would probably either be the highest voter turnout if it's Obama against Cain, or the lowest voter turnout if it's Obama versus Cain. Either one is going to be historic.
Yeah.
Either way, it's going to be historic. I can't imagine him being able to go into Iowa and win the caucuses, or Florida, although he did win their straw poll there. And all the shifting around that they're doing with their primary dates and all these things, it's interesting. But I don't think he'll get it. You know, something, you know, there hasn't been a lot of research done on Herman Cain, I don't think, because he was not taken seriously in the beginning. So I think maybe now the media and those that do the vetting would begin maybe to look a little bit closer into his past, and you never know what's going to come out.
Well, I mean, of course, Rick Perry is still is still truly the front runner. After winning all of the bases this summer, you know, I don't see how Herman Cain can catch Rick Perry. What do you think?
Rick Perry is a lot of things, but the front runner is not one of them. And that's, you know, that's not it. I really think it's still anybody's ball game at this point. Most people are saying it's Mitt Romney's to lose, and that if Chris Christie gets in, you know, then that's the new flavor. I mean, you got to remember the fanfare of Rick Perry coming in. It was, oh, you got to run, and all the people and all the pundits talking about him. Well, those same pundits are now talking about Chris Christie. So, I mean, there's a lack of credibility right there, in my opinion.
But doesn't that show you that they don't want Romney? I mean, come on. I mean, if he's a guy, doesn't that show that they should be throwing, you know, throwing their support behind Mitt Romney and getting him ready as opposed to keep hopping from Republican to Republican? I mean, they hop from Michelle Bachmann, they hop to the Ron Paul, and now Rick Perry, which is, I think, is going to get the nomination because he won all of the base this summer. And now they're trying to call in Chris Christie. I mean, doesn't that say a lot about Mitt Romney?
But what it also says is that there's whoever is pulling the strings in the Republican Party, they really don't know what their base is looking for. They don't have a clue. They don't know. That's what it says to me. Some say that Mitt Romney couldn't get elected because he's a Mormon, and that the strong evangelicals in the in the Republican Party just could not vote for a Mormon. That's one side of it. And so then you have the other side that talks about you know, Rick Perry, you know, and what he's done. And then they talk about, you know, Herman Cain, and then it was Michelle Bachmann because of her strong Christian values. And yet, you know, she doesn't know anything about anything else. And yet you still have these same Republicans who are in D.C. who work in Congress talking about they're standing up for the American people when the American people, 60 to 70% are saying raise taxes on the most wealthy. And yet they still in Congress talking about we're speaking for the American people and they don't want us to raise taxes. Well, which 70% are they speaking for? So they don't know they don't have a clue as to who their base will go out and support. They really don't. And unfortunately, I don't think their base knows who they will go out and support right now.
Well, the Republican base does have a problem, but I also think the Democratic base has a problem. Specifically speaking about, as I shift gears here to what President Obama's remarks to the Congressional Black Caucus. Now, he said at the Foundation's annual Phoenix Awards dinner the following: I expect all of you to march with me and press on. Take off your bedroom slippers, put on your marching shoes, shake it off, stop complaining, stop grumbling, stop crying. We're going to press on. We've got work to do. And, of course, the CBC lost their mind. And specifically, Representative Maxine Waters said, I don't know who he's talking to because we're certainly not complaining. What do you think about that?
Well, Maxine needs to take a memory pill because she's lately been talking about she don't know what he's doing. Just like when she was on their jobs tour and she was trying to figure out why he was in Iowa and not in her city when the tour was based on rural America. That's why he was in those types of cities. So Maxine needs to really, you know, pump the brakes a little bit on some of her own rhetoric. The second part about that is I'm not real sure where people got so offended by his comments, because I didn't get offended by him. But then I'm not the dog that's barking. And so usually they say the dog that barks the loudest is the one that got hit.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been some complaining for you know, they can't sit back and say they haven't complained, because they've been complaining about the president and what he's not doing. And just this week the House GOP comes out with a plan that is talking about cutting NPR funding and cutting training and education funding. And I have yet to see a CBC counter or a progressive caucus counter to that. See, that's what they're supposed to be doing, not the president. And so when the CPC stops talking about what he's not doing and start doing what they're supposed to be doing, then I might be back and supporting you wholeheartedly. But right now, the day that those Republicans came out with a plan, and in my opinion, somebody from the CBC or the Progressive Caucus should have been right there on TV talking about their plan. But they sitting back waiting on the president, and the president out trying to get this jobs bill passed.
You know, who's supporting the president right now? I can tell you that it is very obvious that the Republicans hate him, right? I mean, it's obvious by their rhetoric. It's obvious by their demonstrations. It's obvious by just emails that I even seen in my personal space from people just talking nonsense about what the president has done, and which is not true. And now, when you turn the page and you look at what the Democrats are saying, it's just as bad. You got Cornel West, you got Tavis Smiley, and now Representative Maxine Waters talking about, you give us the okay to do this. I mean, who is for the president right now? Why is he getting so much flack on both sides?
Well, and it's unfortunate because he's been getting this from the beginning. This isn't new. You know, go back to the health care debate, and it was those blue dog Democrats. Who ran as Democrats who were blocking that process, you know. So let's not forget who we're dealing with here. He's had to have that olive branch that people thought was just too much of an extension, simply because he didn't have all the Democrats on his side. So that's number one. But your second point about who is supporting him: young people are supporting him, and old people are supporting him. It's this group that's in our age bracket that got some problems. It's that 30 to 55 age group that's gone crazy and want to just talk about the president any old kind of way. But those younger voters that people keep saying, you know, they may not show up next time, yes, they will, because they understand the vision. They get it. They know they have to do something. They don't mind sacrificing now. That means later I'll be able to do what I want to do. And it's just like, what movie was that? The Great Debaters?
Mm-hmm.
The father tells the son, you do what you have to do now so you can do what you want to do later. That's
right.
The season that we're in. And for some reason, you know, a majority of people in the age group that I mentioned don't see it that way. They want everything right now, and they don't want you touching anything of theirs. So, you know, but I think those that support him, when I look on television and I see him in crowds of young people, they are right there with him. They're not, you know, caught up in the dysfunction of the Democratic Party. Because Melissa Harris Perry said it great, there is a double standard on this president that is unprecedented and has never been placed on any other Democratic president ever. And when we fail to call for what it is, and we try to make excuses about what people are doing instead of calling that elephant in the room what it really is, we do the whole Democratic process a disservice. So, you know, who's supporting him, in my opinion? You know, those of us that are well-versed and can devoid emotion and not get caught up in all the emotional sides of it, but look at the facts. When you look at the facts and what he's accomplished, in these first 3 years, he's accomplished more than Bill Clinton did and any other president in history. When you look at what his platform was and what he's done, hands down, hands down.
And when you talk about that list, I mean, he ordered all federal agencies to undertake a study and make recommendations for ways to cut spending. He ordered a review for all federal operations to identify and cut wasteful spending and practices. He instituted enforcement for equal pay for women, beginning the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. Families of fallen soldiers have expenses covered to be on hand when the bodies arrive at Dover Air Force Base. He ended media blackouts on war casualties, ended media blackouts on covering the return of fallen soldiers. The White House and federal government are respecting the Freedom of Information Act. Limits on lobbyists' access to the White House. Limits on the White House aides for working for lobbyists. Killed bin Laden. I mean, passed health care reform. He's done so much that it is unthinkable for President Obama to have all of this opposition, although he's accomplished so much.
And not to mention, you know, not necessarily just want to compare him and Clinton, but we got to remember, Don't Ask, Don't Tell was instituted under Clinton.
That's right.
So that was the thing, the disparities in sentencing for between crack and cocaine was under Clinton. And not only is he cleaning Bush's mess economically, and in the world of national security, he cleaned up Clinton's mess as it relates to how you treat people.
Right.
See, nobody want to put those things in context. But see, that's the reality of it, though. When you look at all, I mean, when you take a look at item by line item by line item, and what we fail, and then what he's not doing enough in the community, take a look at what he's done and what it has had and how it has had an impact on your life. And I want you to say he's not doing anything. Because, see, the drug dealer that live in your house don't have nothing to do with that. You do. The houses on your street that you let people live in and they don't cut their grass and keep your neighborhood clean, they got nothing to do with the president. That's your fault. You know, so there's some accountability that we each have to own up to about what we have allowed to happen in our communities, in our neighborhoods, in our homes that has been detrimental to our homes, our communities, and our neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And once we own up to that and begin to do some work in just your house and in just your neighborhood, you will begin to see things a little different. Businesses do not want to come to an environment that is unkept. You don't want to do business in an environment that is unkept.
That's right.
So, you know, why would a Fortune 500 company want to come to your neighborhood when don't nobody cut their grass and you got furniture all outside?
I like what the green jobs guy said over the weekend on Bill Maher. He said, didn't say, yes, I can. He said, yes, we can. If you look at the legislation he's passed over the last 3 years, you know he's done his part. It's now time for the average everyday American to now do their part. We're being drowned out by the Tea Party. We're being drowned out by the few Republican people that has the podium right now. And so we now need to make sure that we are moving in the right direction. And that's why I am really excited to see what's happening on Wall Street with these Wall Street protesters right now. It has the stench of a revolution. Now, I don't know what's going to take place for it. They truly have a tipping point, but it's getting closer and closer to the average everyday person now saying enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at the Tea Party acronym, it's taxed enough already, right? Well, I think these people are saying enough already. When they're just saying we're not going to take it anymore. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see a small fraction of the unemployed people, a small fraction of all of these people that's been disenfranchised and been laid off and been pretty much taken over by these corporate people, institutions, now begin to consolidate around this Wall Street issue.
And I'm starting to see
the traction.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think that's why nobody wants to talk about it, because they don't want it to be that. They don't want it to be they don't want it to take hold. They want it to just stay silent and to keep things business as usual. Let's just get through to the next election. Well, that's what the president said in his speech, is that people don't have 14 months.
Right.
You know, for us to get it together. They need us to do something now. And just like he told Congress this week in his weekly address, you know, I gave them this jobs bill 3 weeks ago, and nothing's come back for me to sign. So he's letting us know I'm pushing, and I'm doing my part, but they sitting on it, and they not doing anything with it. And so here we sit with no jobs bill. Here we sit. Nothing being done about the economy, and people still losing their jobs and losing their homes every day. But I agree with you. There's something brewing about this Wall Street thing. And, boy, I tell you, if it continues and every weekend is growing, you're seeing more and more people, and now all of a sudden the media is beginning to cover it. Because when it first kicked off a couple of weeks ago, you didn't know nothing about it if you wasn't paying attention, because there wasn't anybody out there talking about it.
Right.
But now all of a sudden, you know, there's been issues. People been getting arrested. They arrested over 700 people yesterday trying to cross the bridge. And so, you know, those things will have an impact, and people see what happens when you take a stand together. And that's not saying that everybody out there is in complete 100% agreement. But what they are in agreement on is something got to change.
That's right.
Right. They are in agreement that something has to change. When you saw all those people in Egypt, and when you see all those people everywhere else standing their ground, they don't all agree on what's happening, but they know something different got to happen.
Exactly.
And that's what you see up there right now. Something has to change.
I wonder if we're going to end up with the courage to stand this thing out, because we've seen a small hint of this early on in Wisconsin. You know, and then they kind of got deflated, right?
No. We got to remember now, those senators stayed away. That's what kicked it off. You want to know what kicked off this whole revolution spirit here in America? It was when them senators took them Democratic senators said, "We're not coming back." Ill. Mm-hmm. And they stayed away and got the attention that they needed. They were successful in recalling at least two of those Republicans. So that was significant. And right now, the governor of Wisconsin is being investigated by the feds for some improper things. So, and his chief of staff has quit in the midst of this investigation. So it didn't lose any steam. It shifted, because then you had all the nurses, hundreds of thousands of nurses out in California go out on strike, because they were not taking any more in terms of loss of their pensions. Then you had that group of teachers just out there in Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that said, we're not going back to school until something is done. And the students began to march with the teachers. So there's been pockets of situations of people being fed up on about a whole bunch of stuff. And right now what you have in Washington is that is a common thing. And excuse me, in New York, is that is a common thing, because we sat back and we watched Wall Street make profits hand over fist, and you kicking grandma out her house. People see that daily, and people are seeing it not only on TV, but they know people. See, it's becoming personal.
Right, right.
Because it's not just it's not just that type of person. See, it's the same thing. Go back to what I said earlier. We talk about sin and we want to put it in compartments. We talk about mistreating people and we want to put it, oh, that's just for those type of people. Oh, well, they probably couldn't afford that house anyway. They shouldn't have never got it. Oh, it's just for Linda. Well, now, you know, the two wage earner who both thought they had secure jobs in corporate America, one of them is paid off. The other one has been demoted.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not making the same type of income that they were making before. And now they're on the brink of losing something. So it has a different smell to it now. It's not about predatory lending or black or brown people. It's about, you know, the suburbs.
Right.
Where the people have always lived and had always been able to, but now they're down to one income, and that income is not as great as it was.
And what's interesting is that if it would have been the Tea Party out there protesting against the President Obama, then, of course, you would have had all kind of news media covering that, capped out 24 hours a day to hear. But now, since it's the everyday working people and want to have to stand up against the big giant, now it's kind of you have to catch it when you can. You have to look. You
right.
Have to search, you have to search for the news. And just so the listeners
right.
out there are informed, out there on MSNBC, it says that protesters who have camped out near Wall Street for 2 weeks, marched Friday on police headquarters in Manhattan over what they viewed as heavy-handed police response to a previous demonstration. Now, to Occupy Wall Street, the Occupy Wall Street movement, whose members have vowed to stay through the winter, are protesting issues including the 2008 bank bailouts, foreclosures, and high unemployment. More than 1,000 people marched past City Hall and arrived at a plaza outside police headquarters in late afternoon. Some held banners criticizing police while others chanted, "We are the 99%. And basically what they're referring to is that the 1%ers in here in America own all of this wealth, and the 99% is the ones that are catching all of this headaches right now. And so they are saying that they are the 99%, and I truly believe this could be the beginning of the revolution that happened overseas in Egypt, the revolution that happened out these dictators. This could be – we could be witnessing the dawn of the revolution against capitalism, and it's a let me say this: we could be on the dawn of the revolution of the abuse of capitalism in America.
I agree with that, and I think it's time. I think people are frustrated enough. I think they've taken all they can take. They've given, or shall I say, they've given all they can give, and Wall Street has failed to hold up its end of the bargain. And it's, you know, and the untruth that they tell on TV by all the pundits who are probably under the table lobbyists is that, you know, well, Wall Street is afraid of the market, but Wall Street is making the market unshaky by not giving people the money that they need. If Wall Street was to get, I mean, I'm not an economist, and you know, math was not my best subject, but I think I can kind of make some, you know, what they say, some deductions. I can deduce a few things based on the data. And if Wall Street was to give out the millions and billions of profits that they're sitting on, waiting on something to get better, they wouldn't have to wait because things would be getting better. If they would loose the purse strings to small businesses, then people could begin to hire again, or they wouldn't have to lay off. See, you know, it's and for me, that's just real simple. It doesn't take a degree in economics to make that connection. But for some reason, they think we don't know enough, and that, oh, Wall Street can't do it because they're waiting for the economy to get better. And they're waiting for – well, they have a hand in making the economy get better. And I think those people are fed up. And I think when they go out there in October for the jobs march, you know, you're going to see a whole nother thousands of people marching as well. And if those two groups combine themselves and begin to say enough is enough across the board, Washington, you will pass this bill. You will make the changes necessary that all of us would benefit, not just some of us, but all of us would benefit. Then you're going to see some people, and as we move into this election cycle and get in the thick of it, it's some of them people up there that don't need to be there no more. They've been there too long. They've become complacent in their duties. They've become entitled to certain sorts of amenities, and they need to go back out in the world and go work.
You know, this is going to be one of the most interesting election cycles probably of our time. You know, the president has been really, really transparent. He's shown time and time again that he is for the average, everyday people. And then his opposition has shown that they are just truly for big business. And if the American people really want change in our society, they really have to get involved. This is a great opportunity for everybody. This election cycle is going to change the dynamics of the United States forever.
And it only will work if people vote their interests and not against their interests, and if they will finally begin to see past color and look at this president for who he is and what he has tried to accomplish. That is the only way that things will begin to get better for everybody. People have got to take a look at where they are right now. And we've stated this over the months, that things were a lot worse than what we knew when the president came into office. I'm not sure he knew I'm not sure if his team gave him all the necessary information. And I've been in that position, not president of the United States, but in a position of authority over a group of people. And you ask them a question, and they give you part of the answer. So it's not like they didn't tell me the truth. They just didn't tell me the whole truth. So now I'm out defending their actions based on a piece of the truth that they gave me. And then I find out that there was some other stuff they didn't say. And so now I'm left trying to defend. Well, I can't defend what I don't know. And I used to tell my staff all the time, I cannot defend what I don't know. Tell me all of it and let me do what it is you're going to need me to do when the bell is rung. Let me fight, but I have to know what I'm fighting for, and I have to know the whole story. So I think how where they failed this president, but he's done well in spite of, because, you know, it's his season to do that.
Right.
But I think what I don't think his economic team of advisors gave him all of the information. They gave him the parts they thought he needed, and that he that they thought would help him make decisions and sell his decisions to the people. But I don't think they gave him all of the right information, and that's why we're still stuck. Because I'm thinking, had they gave him all of what he needed, then he probably would have asked for a bigger stimulus. And it would have, you know, probably carried us farther than what it did. But then the flip side of that is, when the states got that money, the states didn't do really what they were supposed to do. And so the accountabilities were not in check across the board. It's so much people don't know. And we just hear the sound bites. And we hear the pundits, the stimulus didn't work. The stimulus didn't work because 50% of the Republican governors that got the money didn't do with the money what they were supposed to.
Right.
So that's why the stimulus didn't work. Not
you know,
that, you know, it was by any fault of the president, because once he signs it, then it's out of his hands and y'all go do with what you're supposed to do with it. But that's not what happened.
You know, and also speaking of this election that's starting to come up, well, before I say that, first, I'm like you. I need all the information, right? You can't make decisions unless you have the information. And you need as much
right.
of it as you can. You're not going to be able to get it all, but you should get as much of it as you can, and you can deduce the rest, or you can fill in the gaps where necessary when you do have the information. So I definitely am a big proponent of getting the information. And so we have to be careful as this election cycle takes hold, because normally when the president gets some momentum behind him, what they try to do is do the swap. And what I mean by the swap is to talk about immigration, homosexuality, drugs, the debt ceiling, taxes, health care, anything that can distract you from the real issue that's going to get the American people involved and engaged, and in order to get some real traction for the election. So they'll start they'll start changing the conversation around those issues, right? And so as we begin to get closer and closer to this election cycle, we have to be very careful of that swap that will take place.
Well, and the unfortunate part is that that's already begun, because when I didn't know that my vote was so important, but it seemed like every other day there's a new study about the support of the black vote leaving the president, and then they keep finding ways to bring in the people that's talking about the president and what he's not doing in the community or what he hasn't done specifically for black people, and that he doesn't talk to other groups of people like he talks to black people. They keep coming up with these levels of distraction, and the whole while it's probably your state that has completely changed your voting criteria, and you're so distracted by what they're talking about the president that you don't know that you ain't going to vote in November anyway, because you don't have the proper documentation, because you've been distracted by the nonsense. And that's their key. You're right. It is to distract. It is to distract and keep you off focus, so then they can just slide on in. They did it in November. You know, the whole distraction about balancing the budget and he's spending too much money and he hasn't done this. That's how they took back over because independent voters left. It wasn't the black vote. Black people went out and voted the same, you know, percentage that they do on an off-year non-presidential election. So it wasn't the black vote. It was the independent vote that changed. But nobody wants to talk about that either. That's the elephant in the room. It's the white independent voters that left and went and voted Republican. That's why you got all them Tea Party people up in Washington.
And man, did they make a mistake.
Yeah, and now they sitting back like, this is not what he said when he was running. Well, and Rachel Maddow has a commercial where she talks about how they all ran on being fiscally responsible and balancing the budget and doing spending cuts. Those were the words they used, but not one of it. But since they've been in office, they've done nothing but talk about gay rights. They've done nothing but talk about immigration. They've done nothing but talk about, you know, cutting spending to Social Security and Medicare. But that's not what they ran on. But that's what they've done since they've been in office.
Right. And we need to come up with
zero. Right. And Congress has had zero jobs planned, zero bills around jobs in Congress. And they've had 9 bills around abortion.
Yes. You know, as this election cycle kicks off again, as it begins to move, get momentum, we really need to come up with that list of items that really have that improved our lives since the president has been out, the legislation that he's passed, and so we can begin to socialize that list. We need to be talking to that list. So whenever someone comes up with saying that what he hasn't done, we need to be yelling out 4, 5, 10 things that he has done that's going to really have an impact on our everyday life. And we need to come up with that list, and we need to start passing that list. Everybody that you come in contact with, everybody under the sound of my voice, and everybody that listens to the show and that are friends of me on Facebook, that follow me on Twitter, need to have access to that list. And we can begin to do what they're doing on Wall Street right now, to begin a ground-up movement, you know, start the ground game early so we can get in and so we can start combating this nonsense. Because as they begin to start swapping these issues out for jobs, for immigration, for health care, for homosexuality, for trying to get more people back to work, and they start switching out talking about debt ceiling and taxes, with the right information so we can be armed and ready to go.
I agree because it's only by way of being informed and that you can make, like you stated, as we stated, make the best decisions. I need to have all the information. And right now, we can't rely on someone else to give us all the information because they're only going to give us bits and pieces of it.
Right. So last segment here I want to talk about, and just want to shift gears to Chris Christie for a moment. Now, after months of denying any possibility that he would run for the president in 2012, advisors new to Governor Christie are actually considering it seriously. This is what the aide told the New York Times. Now, Christie hasn't made a final decision, but his advisors have begun to strategize in earnest so they can launch his campaign immediately if needed. Now, what impact do you think that Chris Christie will have on the 2012 race if he gets in?
None. Because Chris Christie, as he said in his own words, that he's not ready to be president or he's not ready to run. And I agree with him on so many levels. I think he'll be the new flavor, just as Rick Perry was initially. And then they'll be sick of him after a while because he'll come off and say something crazy that will just go against the grain of what they, quote-unquote, core beliefs are. So he'll come in on a large fanfare and, you know, have all the music and the bells and whistles. And then, you know, as they begin to dig deeper into his past, or his, you know, some of his things that he's instituted in New Jersey. And although he might have an approval rating right now that's up than what it was, you know, that doesn't mean that people are completely convinced that he's a great governor. And it's obviously that people that have been governors have had some issues lately. So, and New Jersey is one of those states that crime is out of control, and I haven't figured out what he's doing about that.
Okay, so the elephant in the room to me is that if Chris Christie gets in, do you think that because of his size is going to have an impact on his ability to run and be effective?
Well, I'm going to say it's not, but it will. I don't know, and I'll explain that. It shouldn't, shall I say, but it will, because we are a very narcissistic society, and we do everything based on looks and how a person looks to us, and we judge you on how you look, whether or not that's fair or right or whatever is what we do. And he will not pass the look test, because it's not as though he looks presidential. But then, as I posed a question on one of my blogs this week, was does presidential mean white? Because if that's all it takes, then I guess he would qualify.
Mm-hmm.
But I always, you know, the question around McCain was he was too old. But he beat out everybody because the people voted for him. Would the people vote for Chris Christie? Some of them might. But McCain had been in the fight for a while. And the same problem that Mitt Romney had 4 years ago, he has the same problem. He's still a Mormon.
Right. You think that if he gets in, that his weight won't be a problem?
It shouldn't be, but it would. It would be. It shouldn't be, because we should be bigger than that. No pun intended. We should be bigger than that as a nation, but we're not. We're very vain.
Yeah,
we're vain group.
Very, very superficial too. So what happens to Perry, Herman Cain, Michelle Bachmann? What are those people? They fade to black after January?
Well, it all depends, because who just put somebody? I don't know. It depends on how well they do in the next, when they really kick off into their primaries and get into those caucuses. It really depends on who's still standing. I mean, you got to remember Obama and Hillary went all the way to June.
Yeah, but there was a lot of mud in that fight, though. I haven't seen too much mud yet. I was expecting to see a lot more mud now.
No, not yet. Not yet. It's coming, though. It's coming. You got to remember, for me, it's like these debates have been like preseason.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, preseason, it counts, but not really. I mean, it kind of gets you a feel of what the team going to look like and what the areas you need to improve on, but it doesn't really let you know whether or not your team going to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gives you, some areas. And I think these debates have been preseason. You got Rick Perry's wife saying, oh, he'll do much better the next debate. Oh, I bet he will, because he's going to go to class. He's going to pay attention
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
He realized he don't know everything.
Right.
And
the national scene is a little bit different than is the local scene, the state
right.
scene.
Right. And for you to be a three-term governor and you really haven't ever participated in debates, well, that says something about the people that kept voting for you.
Right, exactly.
I was, you know, it's amazing to me that was allowed to happen. So, you know, I think, you know, once we get through the summer, I mean, get through the fall, and these debates become a little bit more, where they mean a little bit more, I think you'll see a little bit more mudslinging. But the fact that you have all the people on the peripheral still asking for somebody to come in tells you that those that pull the purse strings and own the purse strings are not happy with their list of candidates, or they wouldn't be still asking somebody to get in. I mean, that's crazy to me that you have these viable candidates and you still out, you know, looking for the next person.
This is true.
It was just a month ago they was looking for Rick Perry.
Yeah, and then they found him, and now they want to throw him back, right?
right. Exactly. So it's you know, I'm waiting for whoever the nominee is, and I'm waiting for the first debate with the president. That's all I'm waiting on.
Right.
That is all I'm waiting on. I'm ready for that already, and the season is just getting started, so I got a long ways to go.
Speaking of the season, I want to talk basketball, the basketball season. So
What basketball season?
Exactly. I can't believe it that we just went through this same thing with football. Now we're going through it again with basketball. Now, there's rumors out there that saying there will be no preseason for basketball this year.
Yeah. Well, it would be starting tomorrow if it was going to happen. And they've already canceled 47 games, which I'm pretty sure now they've canceled all of them. But, yeah, there's no way because the season would start tomorrow.
Okay.
The camp would start tomorrow, shall I say. Yeah. So they're not in training camp.
Now, rumor has it that
they still trying to meet.
Rumor has it that Kobe is trying to play overseas.
Yeah, same. Italian league over there is ready to pay him $3 million to come over there and play for 3 months. I think that's what it is, or for as long as the lockout lasts. And that I think the only stipulation is he would be able to. He would have to be able to come back to the NBA if the even before that season was over. If the NBA got his act together. So,
wow,
it's interesting. They're still meeting today. I heard Dwayne Wade went off on David Stern in a meeting the other day, you know, yelling at him and stuff. So that's interesting. They're showing some backbone in this issue. The downside is the amount of people that will be without work, the concession stands, the vendors, you know, all of that is going to have an adverse effect on the economy. And then you have some of them, you know, doing some productive things. Some of them have gone back to school. And then some of them working at your local furniture stores like Delonte West. So, you know, they got to do what they got to do to make a living. So I can't fault them for that.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of making
a
living.
It's sad because we were just here with the NBA probably no more than 10 years ago. I know I was living in Colorado at the time when they had a half of a season. So I'm not understanding what the problem is.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of making a living, Brian spoke to a crow in Milan while Virtus explained their potential deal with the NBA superstar. It appears as if the latest talks are centered on a $2.5 million offer for 10 games over 40 days from October the 9th to November the 16th. Brian went on to explain to the Gazette why playing in Italy would mean so much to him. He said, "Italy is my home. It's where my dream of playing in the NBA started. This is where I learned the fundamentals, learned to shoot, to pass, and to move without the ball. All things that when I came back to America, the players my age didn't know how to do because they were only thinking about jumping and dunking." So it looks like a possibility for him that he's going to be playing over there. Obviously, it's good for him because of the money he's going to make, but it's also going to be good for Italy. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm sure just by having him playing over there, they're going to have an increase in revenue and games of attendance and selling of memorabilia for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a win-win for Italy and for that team and the owners for sure. And it's a win-win. Because it takes him back to a place he's familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps him playing and keeps him in shape. You know, the problem is going to be that if the season is salvaged, if the season is salvaged, we're going to find the same problems in the NBA that we're finding in the NFL, and that's the amount of injuries will increase because of a lack of training and
yeah.
preparation for the season, and preparation not just by the body, but by the mind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If your mind is trained and programmed to be ready to play and you're not playing, that's a blow to your psyche.
But why is it that the players have to wait to be working out and getting ready? I mean, you can look at the NFL season and just seeing all these injuries just happening. I mean, people just falling out, breaking this, hurting this. I know I'm not going to talk about what happened at Dallas Cowboys today. That was a disaster. That would happen, but why is
yeah,
it that they
yeah.
have to wait to do a workout? They can get together on their own and play pickup games and work out, right?
Right, but then you run the risk of getting hurt, and if you get hurt doing something that's probably just unsupervised or whatever, then you all on your own, and the NBA or NFL don't have to pay you for nothing. So you run that. Now the second part of that is you're right. There probably could be some sort of training that you could be doing for your body. But that's what I'm saying. You got the body part, but you got the mind part. Because while you're in that workout room toning up and getting your body in playing shape, your mind is like, but we don't even know if we're playing.
Right.
What am I in here doing all this for?
Right.
I might even have a season. So it's not just the body, but it's the mind that has to be, you know, that has to be ready as well. And so I'm pretty sure there's some that probably got full training facilities in their homes, you know, that they can go in and do all the things they need to do. I'm pretty sure some of them got personal trainers, you know. But you talk about that rookie that don't have the multi-million-dollar contract.
Yeah.
He can't afford all that.
That's right.
You know, he got to pay the monthly at Bally's, you know, or go to the gym somewhere, and then he got to pay to get a trainer there. I mean, so it's, and if I ain't got no job, if I don't have a job, it, you know, I'm thinking about whether or not I need to be putting my money in that, if I need to be putting, you know, putting my money somewhere else. So you got all that goes along with it as well. So it's just sad, man. It's just sad because there's so much money out there and so many people are going to be impacted and affected by these decisions that goes back to that 99% and that 1%.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, even in the world of sports and entertainment, it's, you know, it's not that many of them that are the multimillionaires, but they have such a dramatic impact and effect on so many more people.
Right. So this again, about greed, right? Just like it was for football. It's about money.
Oh, yeah, it's about making more, for sure.
It is interesting is that, I mean, how much money does one really, truly have to make?
I don't know. I would be, you know, I look at what they throw away on material possessions that I could live off of for at least 5-10 years.
Or it is just the fact that they balling and champagning and all this lavish lifestyle.
Yeah,
absolutely,
yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, for sure. And there are some that do some good charity work and things of that nature and have started some good foundations that's trying to do some things in their communities. And that's, you know, that's to be applauded, you know. And those children, I'm sure, are grateful to them and their services. But then you have some that just, you know, they 5 years out the league and they broke.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to figure out, well, what did you do with all the money? I mean, you know, how do you spend all of it, you know, and have very little to show for it because now you've lost the house and the club that you had invested in? I mean, you know, it's a sad state of affairs. But, you know, a lot of people were saying that people won't realize that basketball is not happening. They were saying this is more on ESPN. People won't realize basketball is not happening until Christmas Day and there's no game. That's when it's going to hit people. Wait a minute. Ain't no game coming on today? That's when people be like, what in the world is going on? Because it's just, you know, so many other distractions that people are not really even paying attention. And it won't hit them until, you know, that day that they used to have in their game. So,
speaking of distractions, Tony Romo was distracted today. I have no idea how you can blow a lead like that and on national TV. And to be the team that ain't been nowhere in a long time. The Detroit Lions is like 4-0 right now. I mean, we're a quarter of the way through the season, a 16-game season. And the first four games, they have not lost one. And they came back on two big teams, mega teams.
Yes.
And one time on another.
Yes.
What happened?
Same score, I think. Same score.
What happened?
I don't know. I mean, people were out in Twitter world was saying, you know, take him out in the second half because he's going to lose the game. And I guess that's exactly what happened. I don't know how you throw three interceptions. Was it three or two interceptions?
Three. Two for touchdowns and one that got him in scoring position.
Right. So I'm not real sure what he, you know, and my question was it a bad throw or was the receiver not running their route? And then I was told, no, it was him. Neither time was it about the receiver.
Right.
Like,
they were doing their part.
Right.
I don't know.
I'm not sure. I just hope it don't take Jerry. You got to remember last season when the Cowboys started out, what was it, 0-3?
Mm-hmm.
And people were saying, okay, it's time to get rid of you know, Wade, you know, whatever, and Jerry held on to him. By the time he let him go, it was too late. And I just hope he doesn't hold on too long before he makes some changes. If it's not Romo, then what's the problem? And because if I can see it, surely you ought to be able to see it in the press box.
Yeah. So the rating shuffle, or the ranking shuffle, I should say, between OU, LSU, and Alabama. How long are we going to have this shuffle going on? Now, of course, I know, full disclosure, I'm a diehard Alabama Roll Tide fan. And, of course, you are a diehard OU Boomer Sooner fan. And, of course, many of our friends and colleagues are LSU fans. And so as this thing comes to a head over the next several weeks, it is going to be really interesting on what takes place, especially if there is an Alabama OU championship game.
Oh, yeah, that would definitely be an interesting day in the household here between us, for sure. I would have to say, I think the shuffle will continue until one of those teams lose. And I don't see neither one of them losing until, I mean, you know, our big game comes up this weekend, OU-Texas weekend against Texas is a big game. And then you guys are waiting for that November 5th against LSU. Interesting.
Yeah, because we just rolled all over Florida yesterday. So, yeah, we're in a good position. If we can keep up what we're doing and you all can win your next couple of weeks, I think it's going to be an interesting developments over the next several weeks.
I agree.
Well, that's our show for today. I'd like to thank to all our listeners for tuning in. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. And also visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. Of course, that's the blog that Gina writes, she edits, and produces. That's TaylorMade TalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's where we get most of our stories from. And so to get the latest updates and commentary on all of what's happening of the current events, go to TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. That's at TaylorMade101. Until next time, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events where Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.